KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Oh, Pittsburgh, California.
No, I'm not from the Bay Area.
Pinole, California.
San Jose.
I'm from Paradise, California, up north.
San Jose. South San Jose.
Coming up, it's been just over a year since the Wine Country fires. We'll hear an update on the rebuilding process.
In the Tubbs fire alone, the one in Santa Rosa, which is where I was, over 5,000 structures burned. So the past year has been filled with a lot of clearing away debris.
Then Oakland mayoral candidate Nancy Sidebotham says she wants her administration to be homegrown.
If I become mayor, the people that are going to work for me are people that know Oakland, that are involved in Oakland. I'm not bringing them from outside. I'm not bringing them in from New York.
Stay tuned. Cross Currents is next. It's been over a year since a number of fires devastated areas of Sonoma, Napa, and other northern counties. The Tubbs Fire, which began in Calistoga, flattened over 4,000 homes and killed 22 people, making it the most destructive wildfire in California history. Now homeowners are rebuilding, wineries are reopening, and communities are picking up the pieces. Nina, you reported on the Wine Country fires, specifically the Tubbs Fire, and that was a year ago. What's happened over the past year?
I did, yeah. Well, it's been a year, and in the Tubbs fire alone, the one in Santa Rosa, which is where I was, over 5,000 structures burned. So the past year has been filled with a lot of clearing away debris.
Hmm.
And this is Angela. A lot of that debris was toxic waste, too. Lots and lots of cars. And in the weeks after the fire, the EPA came in, as well as the Army Corps of Engineers, and they sifted through all of that debris. They pulled out barbecue tanks and batteries and stuff that you really wouldn't want draining into your water supply.
No. And after that, many residents wanted to try and stay and rebuild, but a lot of people were underinsured, which has really slowed the rebuilding process or forced people just to move away altogether.
And Nina, you reported on undocumented immigrants impacted by the fires and specifically something called UndocuFund. What is that?
Yeah, so I've been following their progress for the past year or so. And so just a quick recap of what they are. There's something like almost 40,000 undocumented immigrants living in Sonoma County.
Mm-hmm.
And after the fire, their access to help was more limited than other people. They didn't qualify for FEMA, and a lot of people are afraid to come forward and identify themselves to the government for more obvious reasons. So a group of community organizers, they got together, and they decided to make this thing called UndocuFund, which would give out funds to people who had been affected by the fire in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So one way they used to distribute those funds is they had these clinics, right, where they would have people come in and they could apply for funding. And also while they're there, they could get water or clothes or blankets or things like that. So reporter Liza Veal and I went to one of those clinics late last year after the fire, and we talked to someone named Davin Cardenas about how the process worked.
And so you would start building a relationship first and then getting into the more logistical questions of where do you live? How were you impacted by the fires?
So that's just a little taste of what it was like for them to interview people, get them the support they needed, not only for things right after the fire, but sort of long term.
Right.
And I checked in with Omar Medina, who runs the UndocuFund, and he says at this point, they've distributed about $6 million to almost 2,000 families, meaning the money has impacted roughly 8,000 people.
Have you been able to follow or keep up with anyone who received money from UndocuFund?
Yeah, so I talked to one recipient recently, and he lost everything.
Mm.
He woke up, he saw smoke, grabbed his kids, and left. And the next time that he came back to his house, it was gone. Everything was gone. Actually, his wife delayed long enough to bang on the doors of several of their elderly neighbors, which likely saved lives. So that was a pretty dramatic story. But anyways, and now a year later, they're renting a new place with the help of those funds they got from UndocuFund, and it's furnished almost entirely with donations from other people in the community. So even being in that space, you get a sense of how much people came together.
Yeah.
But he told me he's still grappling with lingering trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Like recently, there was some sort of issue with his garage door, and it started smoking, and his kids yelled. So he ran outside, and he saw smoke, and he said he totally panicked. And afterwards, he just couldn't stop crying because it brought him right back to that moment when he woke up in his house and saw smoke.
That's so difficult. And a year ago, Nina, you also reported on inmates who were on the front lines of the fire.
Yeah, absolutely. So when those fires began to burn, some of the first firefighters to answer the call were inmates from the California prison system. These are incarcerated people who live in something called conservation camps all year round. So I talked to a few of the firefighters who had just come off of 24, 48, even some of them 72-hour shifts. Michael Drabaum was one of those men, and he described what it was like arriving to the Tubbs fire, his very first fire.
Mm-hmm. So let's hear a clip.
We just drove through devastation of just houses burned to the ground and people scattering everywhere. It kind of feels like you're right in the middle of, you know, you hear as a kid what hell is like. That's, to me, that's what it reminds me of.
So, Nina, did these firefighters help fight this year's fires, too?
Yep. Conservation camps deployed incarcerated people from all over the state to help out with the fires. But there are concerns from officials because over time, the number of inmates volunteering, it's a volunteer program, right? So the number of inmates volunteering to help fight these fires is dropping 13% over the past 9 years, which is even more concerning because, as we know, fires in California are only getting worse every year. And there's been a lot of coverage of these incarcerated firefighters. And I think two of the things people tend to talk about are, one, they can only make up to $1 an hour because of laws that we have that means inmates don't receive minimum wage.
Okay.
And two, it can also be really difficult for former inmates, these people who are fighting fires, to get jobs as firefighters once they're released because of the records. And that struck a lot of people as unfair. But in the past year, there have been some changes here in California. This month, an 18-month program launches in Ventura County, where state agencies are teaming up to train recent parolees in firefighting, which would make it easier for them to get jobs. And furthermore, Governor Brown passed a bill which basically will require local emergency services to submit data about why they hired or denied people with criminal records. So we have more transparency on that.
Okay. So what is it like there right now? Angela, I know you were just up in Santa Rosa.
Yeah, I was there last week, and I was reporting on a larger feature that's coming out soon about environmentally friendly rebuilding. But people were underinsured, and expensive rebuilds have prevented some homeowners and also tenants, people who are rented, from staying. But when you drive around Santa Rosa and some of the neighborhoods like Coffee Park and Fountain Grove and Larkfield Estates, it really does look and sound like a community that's rebuilding. So here's a little clip from just what I heard last week.
I mean, so that sounds like that, you know, there's life happening.
Right. There's life. There's life. And a year ago, I actually drove around the Larkfield Estates neighborhood with someone from the North Coast Regional Water Board. So this was one of the same neighborhoods that we just heard sound from, and it was completely flattened. So now there are dozens of homes at various stages of construction. When I was there last week, someone came up to me and said, oh, you definitely need to talk to these people at the end of the cul-de-sac. They're the first family in this subdivision that's going to get to sleep in their home that night. There's couples that were walking through kind of the skeletons of their new homes. There is a lot of movement up there.
So in terms of lessons learned, are there any new requirements for this rebuilding? Any new rules?
Yeah, so some required, some incentivized. If you're rebuilding or just building a new house, you need to have fire sprinklers in your home now. And that's if you live in unincorporated areas of Sonoma County. They're harder to reach by fire departments in time. Some laws also require new homes to have fire-resistant materials like sidings. This also may drive up construction costs. And because everyone is really just building right now, it's pretty hard to find affordable and available builders. And if you want to and can afford to do more, Sonoma Clean Power is giving out incentives, so money, for installing solar panels, and even more money if you want to make your house totally electric that's not gas-powered.
Okay. And you also reported last year on water quality. Any updates on that?
Yeah, a year ago I went out with a couple different groups as they tested the water, the streams, and they also put out wattles, and those are these hay-filled worm-like sacks that lined driveways and around cars. The motivation was to catch toxins in the runoff from the fires, and recent reports from the North Coast Water Boards, they represent Sonoma County and Napa, indicate that the water quality was not impacted by the fires. And that could have been because of those efforts and also because the 2017-2018 winter was actually a pretty dry one. So we'll see if we get a lot of rain this year and what future tests reveal.
Okay.
And I should note that one Santa Rosa neighborhood, Fountain Grove, that burned down almost all the homes there, they tested really high for benzene in their water. That's a dangerous chemical. That's because melted pipes that were burned in the fire released chemicals into the water pipes. 13 homes remained in the neighborhood. They didn't burn down, and they couldn't drink the water for a year. And only now is that changing.
All of last year. So how's the area trying to be more prepared for future fires?
Well, I mentioned some of the new building codes like fire sprinklers.
Right.
There's also different organizations that have put on fire preparedness workshops for seniors. In September, Sonoma County just tested their new emergency alert system. And if you live there, you can sign up at socoalert.com. Mm-hmm. We can have that link on the KLW website. Four central rural Sonoma County fire agencies also are trying to consolidate into one big fire district to streamline services. That's a shift that was fast-tracked by the October fires.
So one question that a lot of us have been thinking about is, who's being held responsible for these fires?
Well, 1 year later, the cause of the Tubbs Fire and the Nuns Fire, they're still being investigated by CAL FIRE. CAL FIRE has blamed PG&E for more than 10 of the October blazes in Northern California, including the Atlas Fire that killed 6 people, and that was in Napa County.
Why PG&E? What's that about?
Well, a lot of it was about not maintaining power lines correctly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how much does this recovery and rebuilding cost, and who's paying for it?
Well, estimates are in the billions, and PG&E is responsible for footing the bill for the fires that its lines caused. And they say that may be too much for them. It could cause them to go bankrupt. So Governor Brown signed a law that would allow PG&E to pass some costs on to customers. So that's you and me on our utility bills.
All right. Thanks, guys. Angela Johnston is our environment reporter, and Nina Gensler-Debs is our immigration reporter. You can listen to their original reporting on the fires at KALW.org and search for North Bay Fires. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Ababa. Oakland mayoral candidate Nancy Sidebotham is a tax preparer and longtime Oakland resident who's been involved with the community for decades. She ran for city council many times. This is her second go at the mayor's seat. Sidebotham told KALW's Janae Darden why she feels she can bring much needed change to Oakland.
Why are you running for mayor again?
I'm running because people need to hear the truth. We can sit there and say a lot of fluff and make a lot of promises and say what we're going to do, but unless you know the history of Oakland, you know why we're here, you can't change tomorrow unless you know where we've been, because Oakland's a unique city. If you can make it in Oakland, you can make it anywhere.
What do you think is the most pressing issue affecting Oakland right now?
Depending on who you talk to. If you talk to the residents of Oakland, it's the infrastructure. It's the streets. It's the illegal dumping. It's the homeless. It's a whole bunch of different things, but it's mostly the infrastructure and the fact that we keep paying and paying and paying, and we've got no services. When you talk to other candidates, they're going to say the most important issue is the homeless. My issue with the homeless is that's a county issue. It's a federal issue.
What issues related to infrastructure do you want to tackle immediately if elected?
Okay, when it comes to, the first thing I want to tackle is I want a complete audit of the city of Oakland.
A number of candidates have said that.
Well, they're also picking up from me because I was the first one that said it, and I've been saying it for the last 20 years. So when we're talking about infrastructure, we're talking about our roads, our streetlights, anything that holds Oakland together needs to be looked at. I mean, we aren't doing our own materials here in this country anymore. That's why we don't have jobs. And what did I hear on the news? The best year since 1986 or 96 that we've had the least unemployment, that everything is looking rosy. Excuse me, those numbers are based on who's not on the unemployment list. Doesn't count the people that are no longer on it. So it's a false pretense that's put out there, but it sounds good to most everybody. And we need to look at how many people don't have jobs, especially in Oakland. We passed an ordinance in the city saying you can't have big boxes in Oakland because it's a union town. I mean, big boxes aren't union jobs. Excuse me, unions aren't going to hire all these young men and women that need jobs, that are out there stealing from people, breaking into people's houses and stuff because they're told that they need an iPad or they need this, that, and the other in order to be somebody. And they're trying to support their family and stuff. We've got serious issues.
So you're for bringing big box stores to the city?
I'm for bringing anybody. I mean, if you go to Walnut Creek, you go to Emeryville, you go to Hayward, you go anywhere around here, Pleasanton. We're the only city that doesn't have an economic base. We have no sales tax base in this town. Yes, we have mom and pop stores. But would you rather shop at a Walmart versus going to a mom and pop store and paying twice the price for a dress? People don't have the money to spend in mom and pop stores. And mom and pops need to exist because they're renting and the rents are high. So it's a catch-22 on how you look at all of this. That's why everybody's shopping on Amazon and stuff.
So you mentioned bringing big box stores here for employment. What other plans do you have, if elected, for people to have jobs?
Well, we've had most of the manufacturing businesses have closed down in Oakland. One of the things we need to do is the Chamber of Commerce's in this town need to start working together to start cleaning up the city and bringing jobs to Oakland. We have businesses coming to Oakland. I'm not saying that we don't have businesses coming here, but they're bringing their own people. They are not hiring. They're bringing people already set to go. All they're doing is buying a building and putting their people in there to work. We need jobs in this town. We need some kind of an outreach. I mean, we have all these trainings for building trades, et cetera, but there are no jobs. The unions have their people. They're not going to hire anybody else. And when they do hire people for short-term jobs, they're short-term. They're not long-term. And then all of a sudden, even though the city says that you have to hire a certain percentage of Oaklanders when you do a building, yeah, it lasts for a couple of weeks, and then all of a sudden they're disappeared. Nobody follows up on it because the city doesn't have the means to follow up on any of this, much less enforce it.
You said that homelessness is a county and a federal issue. How, if elected mayor, would you work with the county or the federal government to ease the homeless crisis?
Back when Occupy started and they came and they set up their tents outside there, that opened the doors for the homeless to come into Oakland. Because remember, they were moving to Albany, and Albany, the UC kicked them off? They kicked them out. Where did they go? They came to Oakland. But the unfortunate thing is about Oakland is we don't have the resources to handle this.
You mentioned earlier about crime. How are you going to address crime as mayor? Which has always been an issue in Oakland for a long time.
It's been an issue for a long time. And it started when they brought drugs to Oakland and started trying to bring down the community way back when. I mean, it's been going on a long time. And crime, how to bring down crime is you got to bring in jobs. You've got to bring in hope. You've got to give a reason for wanting to get away from crime. And we can offer a lot of things, but until you give them something substantial, something that they can actually touch and feel and be involved in, promises are empty. We've made the Apples, the iPods and whatever else that they sell, we've made them into $1,000 for one of these things so they can sell them on the market and the open on the black market out there, so they know if they go and steal it, they got a way to do it. So they go to jail. They're not going to stay in jail that long because we're not leaving people in jail anymore. And besides that, I call jail college for a lot of kids because they learn to be better criminals. And they've got and for them, that's a sign of courage and it's a mark of I did my deed and I've got notches on my belt. We need to change how we think about things. And that starts with the family and it starts with the schools.
Why should people vote you for mayor?
Because I know Oakland. I've lived here a long time. I've been involved in the politics of Oakland since the 80s. I know where the players. Oakland's a machine-run city. And if you look at the money that people are bringing in, money controls people. I don't ask for money. People choose to give me some, that's their choice. But I'm not out there asking for money because I want to get elected because of what you give me. I want your vote. I want you to believe in me. And if I become mayor, The people that are going to work for me are people that know Oakland, that are involved in Oakland. I'm not bringing them from outside. I'm not bringing them in from New York or San Diego. I'm bringing people from Oakland that know Oakland, that want to make the changes in Oakland because they believe in Oakland and love Oakland.
That was Oakland mayoral candidate Nancy Sidebotham. KLW's Janae Darden is speaking with all 10 candidates. Find the links to those conversations at klw.org. And that's also where you can sign up for our weekly newsletter and get regular updates right in your inbox. We're going to end today with an installment from our series, My Mixtape.
My name is Silas. I'm from Grand Rapids, Michigan, and my song is Them Changes by Thundercat. It really connects me to this time back in 2016. My best friend, Raphael, he showed me this song, and I could not get it out of my head. And I started playing it at this community house that I was living at. Nobody move, there's blood on the floor. And I can't find my heart. Me and my friends there, we would always go to these house parties, and it was still in, I was still in college. And every time we would go to the to where the DJ was, and we would just invade it and get him to play that song, Them Changes, and then we would just destroy the dance floor. This song would just be at the heart of everything of that time period. It makes me just want to dance, makes my feet want to move.
That piece was produced by Sarah Coast. And the rest of today's Cross Currents team includes Kristen McCandless, Truk Nguyen, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Porfirio Rangel, Josh Wilson, Lisa Wang, and Eli Wirtschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our news director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Tune into Cross Currents Monday at 5. We'll hear from Dan Kuramoto of the band Hiroshima as he reflects on 40 years in the music industry.
Every record company says that, you know, you cannot sell records because Asian people, you know, they don't dance and they don't sing.
That's Monday at 5 on Cross Currents from KLW News. This music is by Emily Afton from Oakland. She's performing at Café du Nord in San Francisco tomorrow night. Show starts at 7:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba. I don't know how I found this place. I yearned and turned into the face which I made for.